is the Gut Glow Health, a podcast that will help us understand our health better. I'll talk to experts who will demystify topics like sleep, fertility, nutrition, gut health, and much more, as we take steps to become the healthiest version of ourselves. Since being diagnosed with cancer in my 30s, I made it my priority to educate myself on my health. I discovered creating healthy habits and investing in yourself can lead to wonderful things. I'm so proud to say this podcast is sponsored by Emma. Emma mattresses are created by an in-house team of sleep experts who use only the best foams and the latest foam technologies. The Emma products are designed with you in mind and sure to have you waking up feeling energetic and refreshed. For a limited time, listeners of the Gut Glow Health podcast can save a massive 42% on orders placed through emma-mattress.ie/podcast. You can find this link in this episode's description. Today, Jen Cameron joins me on the Gut Glow Health. Jen is a psychotherapist and relationship specialist. Today, we speak about our relationships and the ups and downs that come with them. We speak about the five topics that most couples seek therapy for: finance, parenting, in-laws, intimacy, and communication. Jen believes self-care and compassion for yourself and your relationship is crucial, especially during these times. We discuss the importance of finding out our individual needs, wants, and desires within our relationship. We also talk about expectations, supporting our loved one through a difficult time, how to mend your child's broken heart, and how to manage and protect your relationship during a global pandemic. Jen Cameron, psychotherapist and relationship specialist, welcome to the Gut Glow Health.
Thank you, Georgie. I'm so happy to be here.
This is so exciting. So I recorded an episode of The Gut Glow with Lee Arnold. I think it was 2 seasons ago. And we spoke about each of our traumas and what we'd been through and the impact that had on our marriages. And in that podcast, I said I must talk to a relationship expert about how we can manage different aspects of a relationship. And I got such a huge response from it. So I'm so glad to sit down with you today and discuss relationships. I think it's such an important topic.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're relational beings, you know, from before birth, we're in the mother's womb and we're never alone. So we have to need relationships to grow and to expand in our life and develop the way we want to.
I suppose at the moment, everything we're going through in 2020, like, you couldn't have written this, what's going on. I felt very lucky to have felt safe in my own home during lockdown. Myself and Jamie have a great relationship, thank God. But we have had our ups and downs, especially through my cancer. Jamie's diagnosed with MS very early in our relationship. So we've kind of been through a lot of trauma as a couple. And COVID just seems like another kind of blip in the road for us and for many other people. Are you finding that relationships are under strain at the moment?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even the healthiest and strongest relationships are coming under pressure at the minute with COVID. It's a very unusual space people find themselves in. In most households, 2 people may be working 40 hours a week. And now they're in the same household, trying to juggle work, not getting outside, not seeing their peers and colleagues. And then some are juggling with children as well. So it can be hugely stressful and difficult. Mm. And that's not even considering the anxiety that's been provoked with COVID-19 being present.
Yeah, and we were speaking on the phone over the weekend and just kind of, for couples, like, if one person is more anxious than the other and how to kind of navigate that, and that can be tough as well for people.
Definitely, yeah, and it can easily be a source of conflict that can arise within a relationship. For instance, if you have one person who's maybe exceptionally anxious around COVID-19, so what I mean by that is if they come home and they've done a food shop and they're wiping down their food shopping, you know, before they put it in their press, if they're changing their clothes straight away, if they're washing their hands consistently, obviously washing your hands is very important, but it's just the extreme level if you're really on top of everything. So that's anxiety provoked, you know, in its peak when we look at COVID-19, how it's impacting. And then if you have a partner who maybe comes in and doesn't feel the need to barely wash their hands, or sits down on the couch and there's no fear, you know, changing their clothes, or just, ah, sure, look, it'd be grand. That's, you know, very difficult to manage. And I suppose the person who's more relaxed is really the person who needs to help the other person feel more secure in the relationship. And how they do that is by doing, I suppose, maybe not the exact same, but by changing the clothes, washing the hands, you know, meeting somebody halfway. It's very difficult to say to somebody, oh, you're just being ridiculous, you know, get on with it. I mean, somebody with anxiety is not going to be able to just hear that and get on with their day, you know, so it's going to cause tension and stress. So we always ask the person who's more laid back, maybe in any situation, to do this thing that they need to do in order to help their partner feel more secure, because security is the bottom line in the majority of relationships when we look at needs.
And what are the most common things people come to you to seek help for?
Yeah, so people come to me, generally there's five. So finance, intimacy issues, parenting. We also have in-laws and communication. You know, so they're the top five deal breakers usually, or, you know, what bring people to that point of needing therapy.
Let's delve into those five. So will we start with finance? And obviously, especially this year, people are probably under more financial pressure than they ever have been.
Yeah. And it can be something as basic, if somebody's hours have been cut in work and they're not bringing in the same income that they used to, and that couple are used to living a certain lifestyle. And, you know, the finance getting on top of them, the other person can't make up more money to get on top of the bills over time. I mean, that can really cause a lot of frustration. This also happens when people tend to have babies. You know, sometimes one person will be at home and may, you know, not get maternity leave or wants to take an extra 6 months off. And that's where finances can really play a big part. You know, there could be pressure, a change in roles. People can feel guilty. It's basically just a source of conflict overall. Mm-hmm. Or if you have a constant spender, you know, one person's a constant spender, the other person's a constant saver. You know, you need to get a balance, because otherwise each person will feel hard done by at some point within the relationship.
In terms of parenting, I think a really good point to make is I was diagnosed with cancer when Pia was 7 months old. Mm-hmm. I started counselling a year after my diagnosis. So Pia was like 1.5. And it was tough, very difficult to have a baby and go through chemotherapy and all that. And when I met with my counsellor, she used to say, you know, nobody talks about the first year after you have a baby and the absolute strain that puts on your relationship, mm-hmm. because everything changes. So to have the cancer on top of that, she's like, you know, give yourself a break. And I really appreciated that. But let's talk about the first year after having a baby and the impact that can have.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a baby, yeah, is a complete game changer, even for really healthy relationships. A lot of the time we don't know how we're going to be as parents until children are actually there. And then, as we know, babies have their own little personalities from day dot. So, you know, babies, it's exciting, it's exhilarating, you know, it can be so wonderful having a newborn. And equally, it's the most worrying time, you know, the most stress provoked. It can be exhausting. You know, you're trying to manage and get to know this little person that's now in your life that depends on you fully. So your time and energy is really at its lowest, I think, of what you can give your relationship at that time. And yet it's what your relationship needs the most at that time. So when we look at, you know, what happens when a baby comes along, domestic duties, you know, the laundry, feeding, cooking, all that stuff, you do that anyway, but it basically doubles over, because, you know, if you don't do your laundry without a baby before you have a child, you can just leave it there for a week and buy a top. But I mean, babies get really dirty and messy, and they can, you know, their clothes can smell. You know, you need to keep on top of these things. And the same if you ask, you know, your partner to do something, you know, you constantly need to have baby wipes. You need to have different things there all the time. You have to be on top of it. Your child will scream if you don't feed it. You know, it will cry. So you're dealing with that level of, you know, I have to know when they want to eat. I have to know what they want to eat. Or are they feeding from me? Am I giving them formula? Are they okay on this formula? There's so much around that piece around domestic duties. And I think it's important that people are aware that they don't let, you know, resentment build. Because sometimes one person feels like they're doing too much, they're doing everything. And equally, other people can feel that maybe they're shut out from that part, that they don't actually have the space to be as involved with the baby on the first year. So it can really depends on each relationship, but it's definitely testing.
I think the biggest thing that I noticed when we had a baby is that we went from being a married couple and excited for the baby to being co-workers. Really? And it's like, I'm doing this, now you go do that, and we need to get this. And it's just the communication needs to be stepped up a lot, I think, in terms of, and would you speak there about resentment building, and I've definitely experienced that you just let it build and build and build, and all of a sudden you have this outburst and the other person appears shocked that you feel that way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, how do you not see this? Yeah, completely. And I mean, it's even down to, yeah, time. You go from couple who have all the time in the world to then family time constantly and still not having time together because you're both working to facilitate the baby, you know, to make sure they have everything or keeping your schedules together. And parenting styles is also a big thing that happens. You know, sometimes you think, oh, we'd be the exact same. You know, we want our baby to sleep in their cot every time they have a nap, or we want them to self-soothe, for instance. You know, we're not going to do doties and everything. And then somebody else might be like, what are you talking about? You know, let them cry it out. Let them have a dotie. Let them sleep at 5 o'clock on the floor if they want. That's fine. So you're often contending. People don't realize what their parenting styles are literally till they're in it. And so you also have to communicate on that piece, you know. And sometimes people can be reluctant initially to change because it's a bit of a power battle. You know, it's kind of like, well, I don't mind if they sleep at this time and it's fine. I want them to. And then you say, well, they can't sleep. Say if it's at 5 o'clock in the evening on the floor. And you say, I can't let the baby sleep at that time. So what we often recommend is that the other person, the person who decides what they want to trial with the baby, they then deal with the method, the consequences of that method. So, I mean, if you let the baby sleep at 5 p.m., and then if the baby's up, you know, at 3 a.m., then the person who's decided for the baby to be down at 5 should deal with the baby then at 3 a.m.
Oh, that's so interesting.
So the point is that sometimes we have to, and it's the same, you know, in lots of different ways, but try it out. It's trial and error. Sin, people have time to understand, you know, where the other person's coming from, or maybe this would work with our child, maybe this won't. You know, it's trial and error, but it's to keep that communication open. And we have to experience these things ourselves to really connect with them. And that's the point.
I think a saving grace for us when we had Pia, she was about 13 months old and she started to wake up for 2 hours a night. Wow. And I was in chemo. And I remember saying to Jamie one night, like, I'm going to die if this continues, just because you feel so desperate in the middle of the night. So the next day, Jamie got up, he rang nannyoptions.ie. We got this amazing woman called Teresa. Wow. I was very reluctant to get help, you know, because I was like, no, we'll figure it out. It will figure itself out. She came out that week. She spent 2 hours with Pia. And by the Friday night, she was sleeping in her own room for the full night. And we didn't do the cry it out method or anything like that. She just changed her routine.
Yeah.
And the difference that made, and from then on, we were getting a full night's sleep. So I always try to recommend Teresa to people because it can literally change your life, just having a baby that sleeps the night.
Completely. Yeah.
And I suppose then in terms of the first year, and that can probably spill over into the intimacy category, because you've got little people, you know, up all hours of the night, you're absolutely exhausted, you may be breastfeeding, you know, going through all these changes with your body, and the intimacy just may not be there for some couples.
Yeah, and again, that's very normal part of this phase in your life. And I think it's important, you know, that I'm glad you touched on that, because I think a lot of people don't speak about that really. There's often less time for intimacy. And it's more hassle, you know, when you have a baby, either who's maybe up to 1 or 1.5, or, you know, it's different for everybody. But it's definitely something that causes tension within a household. And I think it's good to look at, you know, keeping a room that's free of the baby. So we often say, like, keep the baby out in their own room. You know, your bedroom should be your space. There should be nothing to do with a baby in that room at that time. More just to create, you know, a bit of a cocoon for you and your husband, that life is there without the baby. And, you know, a funny one is when you're first dating your, you know, partner, people schedule time for intimacy. You know, you might be like, oh, I'm meeting them tonight, going on a date, you know, I want to shave my legs, and maybe go here after, maybe do this. You know, that's how you think. Whereas all of a sudden that stops. And I suppose we ask you to re-engage with that. You know, literally schedule intimacy into your life. You have to say, okay, how can we, you know, be intimate? How can this work for us both? When would both feel most relaxed in the day? Or, you know, keeping it real and keeping date nights consistent, regardless of what's going on with the baby.
And when you say date night, do you mean like going out, or could you schedule in dinner at home at the kitchen table?
Yeah, either or. I mean, I think it's important to get out of the house, but obviously that's not realistic for lots of people all the time. So I think if you got out once a month together for a date night, and then once a week at least, make time within your home. And I suppose that's the whole piece about keeping your bedroom separate from your baby. You know, not that you have to be in the bedroom, but I'm saying you're going to create a meal or a space when the baby's down. Speak, regain that connection. Don't talk about the baby. Have a rule. We're not going to discuss Pia today. Not today, like now for the next hour or two. This is about me and you. So what's going on with you? And make the effort, you know, get dressed up, do whatever it is that, you know, makes you feel good. Kind of what you would have done before in the earlier stages.
Yeah.
And to keep the spark alive.
And I suppose now that we're all kind of at home all the time, that you may feel like you don't have as much to talk about because your day, you know, your husband hasn't gone off for 8 hours and is coming home with lots of news. You've both been just staring at each other across the room for the day. So there's a real like shift in dynamics of relationships at this time.
And yeah, again, just as a whole, I mean, we don't need to talk all the time. A lot of the time, you know, our body language says it all. People need breaks. They need time out. And sometimes work is also that avenue, you know, for people. We encourage with COVID that people are still getting their needs met on some level. So if you're into walking or exercise, make sure that you're getting that in your day. It's a priority. Same for your partner, whatever it is that they do. You need time on your own to be able to just refresh, recoup, revive, and come back to that family home and to that couple relationship. And I suppose silence can be golden. Embrace it. You're not going to lose touch with who you are. But I suppose we just don't have to discuss everything consistently. You know?
I think I would be like a fixer in a relationship. So, you know, if myself and Jamie fell out, I'd be desperate just to make it all better. Whereas Jamie would be a little bit more stubborn, would kind of be quite comfortable not talking to me for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And if we do kind of have a tiff at home, he might say like, go out for a walk, talk to me when you're back, or you know, go for a run, or he'll do the same. I think getting out and getting a bit of fresh air kind of gives you just a bit of clarity and can really help the situation.
Yeah, definitely. And perspective, you know, sometimes we just need to be out of that initial space that we're in so that we can see things clearer again. And like that, a lot of petty arguments that are happening at the moment, it's because of personal frustration. It's not because of the other person. I mean, we're taking things out on the people closest to us because they're within that space. But if things were normal, would we still be having the same argument? You know, most likely not. So it's acknowledging and owning your piece as well. Okay, am I annoyed today with Jamie because he's doing X, Y, and Z, or he's ignoring me? Or actually, is it because I'm really frustrated and I've been in this house for 2 days now and I'm just over it? You know, I just need to see somebody else, another human.
So communication, is that face-to-face communication? Sometimes is it easier to say things through text if you've had a falling out with your other half asking for a friend?
No, never. Stay away from a text. I suppose communication is the number one thing. Relationships work when there's communication. And fundamentally, if the communication is broken and can't be repaired, then there is no relationship. Texts, there's no tone in a text. So I feel it's really important to stay away from texting. It's kind of cold and kind of the easy way out. You know, it's sort of like, let's keep this eye contact. I suppose when we're communicating much more than just verbally. You know, when somebody's in front of you, we're taking the whole person in, you know, you're watching their face, their mannerisms, how they are. Like if you're saying sorry to your husband, or you're watching them as a whole person. Whereas when you get a text, you know, it's kind of like, ugh, does he even mean that? How do I know? Because I mean, the words are there, but he didn't even say them. So I think it's stay away from that. And really, face to face, often people do better, you know, car journeys. Like, it's funny, keep it light. If there's something, sitting side to side with somebody is often a better way and easier. It's not as threatening to have conversations. If it's a hard topic between you, we would often recommend that you go for a drive, or when you're sitting on the couch together side by side, instead of, you know, face to face, the intense, like, I'm watching you, you're watching me, mm-hmm. taking it all in. It can be very intimidating, even for couples who've been together for like 10 or 15 years. It's just how we respond differently.
Yeah. And do you see like a kind of pattern? Would you know, that you hear this, like the 7 year itch, the 5 year itch. Mm. Would you see that people are coming to you after a certain amount of time being married?
Yeah. I mean, the 7 year itch is very real.
Is it?
Yeah. And I think it's fascinating. It's just that we grow, I suppose we grow and shift every 7 years as humans. So that's how we look at it, you know, in our theory. And basically, you have to grow together. I mean, it doesn't mean you have to grow at the same time. But if one person grows too quick, so to speak, the other person, if they're left behind, they can't kind of stay on the same level. You know, you lose that kind of level of connection and intimacy. Whereas if you can acknowledge, look, I'm in a different space now, or I'm doing this right now, I'm really into it. And your partner or husband can say, yeah, that's great, I respect that, and that's fine. Then they're aware of it and you can work on it. You can involve them more. You can let them know what you're doing or what this means, how it's changing you or changing your life. Whereas if we ignore all of them things, drifts happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some acceptance as well around, you know, when things get difficult, is it to take a step back and relook at, like, relationships are always going to be difficult, as in challenging at different times. And time again, we notice that it's the daily tasks that break couples. So it's actually not the big events, illness, affairs. People can really work through that and move on and be steadier than ever. But it's generally the day-to-day niggles that build all that resentment that people kind of drift away from and say, you know, good luck, that's too much for me now.
Wow. And I think that for a lot of people, that maybe they would feel like going to relationship counselling is the last step, or the last thing to do before you kind of decide if you're going to stay together or not. Mm. But people who have gone to relationship counselling can't say enough about it and how much it benefits their relationships. And I think in America, they, you know, in the rest of the world, they probably are much more comfortable with it. But what would your perception then be of how we're dealing with it here in Ireland?
Yeah, great. I mean, I feel that there's more demand for couples counselling now than ever, which is really promising, because like we said, relationships will come into difficulties, you know, at different times. And a lot of the time, couples counselling works because, well, you're sharing your intimate space with somebody else. So it's fresh eyes. It's a new perspective. I can give awareness to people on their behaviours and how they're being related to within their relationship. So what the other person is picking up on that maybe they're just so used to, they don't even see it. Mm. And also there's useful skills and tools that people can reflect on and re-engage with. To keep the interest and, you know, the commonalities, what got them together in the first place, they can start to see that again. And it may not feel as daunting as it is when they're at home and make that decision to go to couples counselling. Like, you're right, Georgie, and people get to that. It's usually one person saying, right, this is it, let's go and bear it all, or that's it. Which can be very difficult, and equally it can be a very warm experience. Couples can really see each other in ways that they've forgotten that they've seen them before. Even as individuals, you know, they can start to appreciate them again, maybe if they've lost that. They can start to see them as more visibly attractive than the person who just comes in and puts the food on the table. It's a real eye opener. I suppose it's a space.
Mm-hmm. If one of you is reluctant to go to counselling and say, no, I don't want to go, that means, that signals the end for us.
Mm.
How do you encourage your partner to go with you?
I think that's really difficult, because such a good question. You know, I understand maybe counselling is not for everybody, and I feel couples counselling in particular, because people take it as a direct failure, or they feel it's insulting that they'd have to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you have to look at, you know, the difference between ego and relationship. And ultimately, the bottom line is, if your relationship is important to you and you've tried other avenues and things aren't improving, if you're not willing to try couples counselling, you have to ask yourself why. Why? Again, it comes back to that security need. Why do you not want to do that for this other person? If they're the person that you want to be with, that you love, that you honour, that you respect, why would you not want to make them feel more comfortable? It doesn't mean couples counselling will fix it all, but it's just, you know, you'd want to meet them halfway.
Mm.
And sometimes as well, like with the counselling, I feel when people come in, my first question is, you know, are you both here because you want to? Like, are you checked in or is one checked out? And it's obviously very telling within the first couple of sessions. People will usually go quiet, or one might say, well, I am. And then the other might be like, well, I'm not sure. I'm here, but I'm not sure. So it's good that people can be honest, but you know what you're working with. But for therapy to work and work well, you have to want to be there and you have to commit. So you have to commit to doing some of the tasks that are needed to be done. And a lot of that is around spending time together, active listening, things that, again, you'd be willing to do if you want your relationship to work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think the hardest piece is to share with the therapist. It's hard. And sometimes it's generalization, which I don't really like going there. But generally for men, it can be more difficult sometimes to be able to say, oh, well, this is what's going on in my sex life, or this is what's happening when I say this to my wife. Or, you know, so it's important that you can take it all in and mm-hmm. acknowledge how vulnerable people are in front of you.
It's so interesting and absolutely fascinating. I think as well, when it comes to counselling, like making the appointment is the hardest part of it. I was terrified to go to counselling because I didn't want, you hear it has to get worse before it gets better. I didn't want to kind of bring up all these emotions that I had about cancer that I kind of blocked out or pushed down. But I have to say, after the first session, each time I went, I felt like I'd been to a yoga class. Like that's how I actually felt physically different.
Mm.
And it can just do so much for your physical health as well, because it's just so important to acknowledge how you're feeling and understand how to manage those feelings, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, I certainly believe that, you know, feelings manifest, you know, mm-hmm. we can become physically ill if we're not looking after our emotional well-being to a degree. And I think that when you go to therapy like that, it should be a relief. Yes, it can be very hard. I describe it as a roller coaster. You know, you're going to be in and out and the emotions will flow, but the self-awareness and clarity that you get afterwards, overall, it's for your better well-being. It's actually life-altering. I clearly believe in therapy, but I suppose as a therapist, I'm not somebody sitting here saying, oh, therapy works, and I've had to live through it. So I understand what it's like to be the client in the chair and to take it all in and move with what you're looking at, mm-hmm. just yourself.
Yeah. On to in-laws now. It can be a kind of touchy subject for a lot of people. And then again, I suppose the in-laws could fall into the chapters of your life category. You may not be so into your in-laws around the time of your wedding or the mm-hmm. time of your first baby, but then you're great again a couple of years later. So what would your advice to be to people who their in-laws, I suppose, are just different to who they are?
I think, again, communication is key. If you have in-laws, are usually a high topic, and if you come from, say, your family, Georgie, is very enmeshed, so your family live next door to each other, so to speak, live in each other's pockets, you ring each other 20 times a day, you're in and out of each other's houses all the time, and then Jamie's family maybe are a bit more boundary orientated. So his mother may ring and say, I'm going to pop over on Saturday and today is Thursday. Does that suit? You know, if you say no, she won't. So when somebody comes, when two people come from two very different families like that, it can be challenging initially when they start living together and yet when they're being parents for the first time, because you have to establish your own boundaries of what works for your relationship. And sometimes I suppose people see nothing wrong with their own way of being. You know, what's wrong with having my family around all the time? But it's about respect. You know, it's about respect and honoring that space for that person that is your first family now. That if they're not comfortable with that, how can you work around it? And tips we'd say are, have your family over, but have them over at times that suit you both. Or maybe when the other half isn't there all the time, have them over. Discuss it. You know, if you want a family that's more boundaried, let them know, you know, say to them, listen, love having you over, obviously, we just need a bit of space, or today is about us, or it's communicating.
Mm-hmm.
But fundamentally, honouring your relationship is key.
So is that a, like, okay, we sit down, And we're going to actually literally talk about this.
Oh, yeah. In-laws, and it's really funny because, again, people think that it's not such, like, nobody would probably put in-laws on that top five deal breaker list. You know, mm-hmm. you might go, okay, people have issues with in-laws, but I mean, is it really kind of like, whoa, we're going to like split? But they really are. It's so, families can be so intrusive and yet so helpful and caring. But if you're not on the same page, around what you need, it's fine. Like, say if Jamie, for instance, was saying, I don't mind your family being around all the time, it's great. Well, then that works quite well. So mm-hmm. then, you know, you kind of go, right, this is the in-law situation, but we're both really happy with that. If something changes, like maybe when you got sick, Georgie, if something changes and a parent is over maybe more than what they would have been, that's also something to check in with. You know, am I okay that, you know, your mom's over every day now? I know she's helping, mind you, but that can still be a huge adjustment and mm-hmm. a change and a new dynamic within the relationship.
I found it really interesting when I got sick, actually, Jamie and my mum started to kind of almost tag team and work together. They were like texting and kind of just trying to figure out what was the best way to help me. So the fact that they worked together, I think, was just amazing and gave me such peace of mind that I just felt like everything was organized all the time. And through such a sad time, watching a relationship grow closer like that, it can be just so lovely as well.
Yeah, so special.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute, but first I wanted to tell you a little more about Emma. Made right here in Ireland, the Emma mattress comes with a 10-year guarantee and is delivered for free and straight to your front door. If you're not 100% convinced, you can return it hassle-free for a full refund. Try Europe's most awarded mattress now for 200 risk-free nights and discover the secret to a great night's sleep. The Emma mattress consists of three high-quality foams that perfectly adapt to your body to offer you the right amount of support, pressure relief and comfort, while the breathable materials help keep you cool even during the warmest nights. Just the thing you need to wake up feeling energetic and refreshed. Now, back to the conversation.
We go on to talk about needs, wants and desires, because when we were speaking over the weekend about this, you were putting certain things into the needs, wants and desires, and I just found it so fascinating. So will we start with needs?
Yeah. So needs are fundamental. So that basically means, what needs do I have as a single, like as a person myself, that have to be met within my relationship? So usually the main one is security. We need security within a relationship to feel safe and to feel okay and to know the other person has our back. We need trust a lot of the time. You know, you have to trust that your partner's there for you, that you can talk about things, you can be open. That could be another one. People's will generally vary, but security is always there. Trust and honesty are usually quite high up there as well. Mm-hmm. So there are things that you won't compromise on. So it's like, okay, I'm in this relationship, meet this new person, or I'm already in this relationship. Do I already have that? Yes, yes, yes. Then that's a really positive sign. Then if we look at desires, we might look at people being present. So are you present? Are you able to be present with me when I'm talking to you and having all sorts of conversations? Do you appreciate me? Do you acknowledge things that I do in the house? Do you understand me? Do you understand me when I'm upset or when I'm happy or when I'm sad? So they're desires. So a desire comes just underneath a need. As in, we need desires, but if we don't get them all, we'll be fine. But there's certain ones that we won't compromise on within the relationship.
So active listening, how can we make more of an effort? Is it literally to put your phone away?
Yeah. So disconnecting is a big thing. Turn off the telly, turn up, put away the laptops, put away everything that's digital, basically. Mm-hmm. Make time, have dinner, cook a meal together, sit down and just have a chat. You know, sit in silence. Sitting in silence is nearly more communicative than being there on your phones, mm-hmm. you know, just be present. So be present to that other person.
Yeah.
Even if they're not saying anything.
And even if you're watching a movie, Jamie, sometimes like, please just turn your phone onto flight mode so that we can watch it together. Yeah. And I don't feel like you're checked out.
Exactly. To be in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's the desires. So then the wants is number three, is it?
Yeah. So wants are things that we obviously would want to have in a relationship, but that really, if we have them or not, it's not going to fundamentally make break us. Now, some people might say fun, but it depends on everyone personally, but say if fun was one. A lot of people like to have fun in their life. So, and yet it comes under wants a lot, but I suppose it's something, if they could have security or trust or honesty instead of that, they'd pick them first. So it's knowing that we can't get everything, but what we can live with and live well. Another want would be compliments. I mean, I want my husband to say, God, Jen, you look hot. You're sexy. I'd be like, oh, thanks. It's a want. I want to know that. You know, I want to hear that. I don't want it to die because we've been together such a long time. So my point is, that's a want, a compliment. So keep that there. Your partner has to know all of these. And this is why this is all important. A lot of people don't know their needs, wants and desires. They don't even know that they need to have awareness around these before they enter their relationship. So usually when they come to us for couples counseling, you're asking them, what are your needs? What are your desires? What are your wants? It takes time to look at it. And then they come back and they say, okay, this is my need, security. Yeah, this is, I want my parent to be present. There are some times we can work on that. And there's no fun in the relationship. That's a want. Okay, so we need to change that up a bit. Now, how would you rate them on the importance? How can we start to make that happen within your relationship? What can you do? So it's getting people thinking, but connecting the way they need to for that other person to respond healthily and well.
And it's so funny that you can live with someone and spend all your time with someone. And then you probably go into a session like that and write down your needs, wants and desires. And the other person could be shocked at what you say. Floored.
Yeah. Floored. Yeah. And it does. It happens an awful lot, honestly. And sometimes we do what naturally we like, you know. So it's kind of saying, oh, my partner would love this because this is what I love. But actually, a lot of the time we're wrong. You know, genuinely. And they might be like, no, I'd much rather if we just cooked a meal together instead of dolled up and going out for a night. I don't know, but that's just a very simple one. But if you look at it on a much deeper level, it's very surprising. And that changes as well. And so that doesn't mean that that's concrete for your whole relationship. Again, as we grow, as we get older, our needs change. And we have to constantly keep the communication so that we can touch base on that.
And do you think it's important? Could people listening make that list at home, or do you kind of need a mediator to get that list in order?
No, not at all. I think people can do this at home. They can do it themselves. Ideally, you do it yourself and then you marry it back.
Yeah.
So you could take as long as you need, write down needs, desires, wants, think about them all. Pick out the ones that are most important and then come back together, set a time where you can both discuss them and then see, okay, what's your need? What's your want? And they don't have to be the same. I think that's really important to know. It just means that you have to be able to reach that person on their need level in order to have a very healthy relationship.
Yeah. In terms of expectations, I think this is a huge one and could lead to like disappointment in a relationship when you're maybe presuming the other person knows what your expectations are.
Completely. Yeah. And that comes back to our families of origin a lot of the time. So when we grow up, we whatever we experience between our parents or, you know, if your mother's there, your father's there, that's your norm. So we feel like that's how it should be. And it's really on an unconscious level that we take that in. So even if we grow up and think, I don't want something to happen the way it did at home, you're still conditioned and exposed to that. So you're most likely going to carry that into your relationship. So a really simple one would be in my household, say growing up, my father would have always put out the bins every week, carted the bins out and put them out. So then I go into my relationship and I move in with my partner and, you know, we're living there and the bin doesn't go out this day. And it's like, why isn't the bin gone out? That's so weird. The bin needs to go out. It's on the list or whatever. And then you say to them, you know, you've put out the bin today. They're like, well, neither did you. And then you're like, well, but I mean, you really didn't put out the bin. And they're like, yeah, but sure, you can do it or I'll do it next week. Like, what's the big deal? But something so small can, over time, that's where the grind, you know, the stuff really kicks in. But that's me having an expectation in that example that maybe I wasn't even aware of, that I expect that the person I'm with to put that bin out because I don't plan on putting it out myself. Due to my expectation. It doesn't mean I can't change it, but it definitely needs to have room to discuss. And equally, my partner could turn around and say, well, actually, I'm not comfortable with that and I don't want to. You do it. In my house, my mother put out the bin. So then again, it's a conversation to have. Okay, which one of us is going to put out the bin today? And it seems so small, but it really is the small things that that grate and that draw resentment.
Yeah, yeah. And would you recommend then, as like families, or if you're in a just the two of you in a relationship, that you're writing things down? Like if you're coming from a place of chaos, the house is a mess, you're always running around, does kind of timetables and writing down expectations help?
Yeah, I mean, I think schedules and routine is key for everybody. People like to know where they stand. Clear, direct communication. If we're saying to our partner, the vegetables need to be got in the shop today for dinner later, I'm not going to get there. Can you stop and get them? then, the, you know, that's clear. They can say yes. And people respond better generally in their relationship when there's clear communication. So people like to be asked to do something, then they know that's what's expected of them in that moment. And then when they meet that need, then effectively they're praised because people will say, oh, thanks, you know, or I really appreciate that you stopped. And then that, of course, drives on the cycle of, oh, well, I'm going to do that more often, or I'm going to be more aware once I'm, you know, doing these things. Because it's important to have a lot of encouragement within a relationship too. And couples counselling is a lot around that as well. People often forget what their strengths are. So you want to pull that back. You know, what are you good at doing together? What do you both enjoy? Some people who are struggling on one end could be fantastic parents together. They could really be on the same page 100% when it comes to their parenting. So there's always avenues, you know, that people do well in. It's just encouraging that again.
In terms of like going through a period of transition, which I think we're in 2020, but like if there is an illness or a bereavement, I think in my relationship, I was not lucky, but we understand each other a lot because Jamie was diagnosed with MS and I was the partner of a sick person. And then that same thing happened then when I got sick.
Yeah.
So sometimes now it's nearly 3 years on from my cancer diagnosis and I'm freaking out to Jamie about something. And he's like, you know, you're letting your anxiety get the better of you. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but I'm an anxious person now. Mm. But then I remember how anxious he was after his diagnosis and how much it used to annoy me sometimes. And I'd be like, God, can we just move on from this?
Yes.
So we're blessed in that way that we have that mutual kind of understanding. But for someone who may be just going about their lives together and everything's perfect and then bang, something happens, it can just be an absolute earthquake.
There's no doubt about it. Communication is really, really key. And it sounds like you and Jamie have that and did throughout that experience, because you need to be flexible with your moods, but your emotional needs will change quite dramatically up and down when either you're diagnosed with an illness or the partner who's with you is there to experience that with you. And them intense feelings, it can just be overwhelming for the other person as much as for you. And I suppose it's all you can do is really validate their feelings, you know, understand them, hear them, validate, you know, experience, empathize towards their loss, whatever it is that's happening for them in that moment, and reassure them that they're still loved. They're still of as much value to you as before, and that you're steady. But it takes time and patience. And I feel it's when, especially the other person who's maybe not unwell, needs to have added supports. So they really need to be able to have family or counsellors or somebody where they can offload to manage and deal with the huge intense emotions that come with somebody being in treatment and their emotions, you know, because they're sharing that with them.
Yeah, and it's definitely just such a, I suppose we're all going to go through tough times in our lives, and just to know that, well, for us, like it did get better. There, you know, there's light at the end of the tunnel. You can get through things. Just a question for maybe a listener who has a young person who is maybe in their 20s, coming out of their first relationship. It's heartbreak central, you know, that first love when your heart is broken. And I just look at Pia, I'm like, oh my God, if I had to watch your heart getting broken, I don't know how I'd survive. But how do you talk to a young person who thinks their life is over if their relationship is over?
Yeah, it's very tricky. I suppose as a parent, you are looking at it from, this is part of life. Heartbreak is part of life. I'm listening to what you want to say. You know, I hear you, I feel you. We've all been there, and that's not to minimize, but it's to put things in perspective. I feel as a therapist, when people fall apart completely, if a relationship ends, it's usually because they're over invested. So emotionally, they're overly invested and on that other person's wavelength of their emotional regulation. So when that's stopped and taken away, that person crumbles and falls. So they have to rebuild self-regulation, basically, and their emotional system. And that requires, I suppose, a lot of work in therapy. I know that's not a great answer, but what I'm saying is you need the tools. You need to rebuild the tools in order. It's a lack for you. There's something happening for you if you're overly invested. And we all need tools. And I think that's really important. You know, as you started there with Pia, she goes up and, I mean, she will experience this, no doubt, you know, in her life. I think the fundamental best gift we can give our children is to give them the emotional tools and support that they need to be able to live well and live without us.
Mm.
Because without being too dull, we definitely know that we live, we definitely know that we'll die. And there's nothing like the trauma, I think, of losing somebody important without having them skills mm-hmm. to actually keep yourself afloat and understand that you can check into these emotions, but you can still function and that there's a bigger picture. I know you're saying somebody in their 20s, which is obviously different. Again, if you look at somebody between 16 and early 20s, I'd be saying, you know, they're in a developmental stage. It's hugely difficult to give somebody that age any kind of perspective. They're just not, to some degree, able to fully take it in,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they're still growing, their brain's still growing and where they are. So it's meeting the person where they are, reassurance, being a listening ear, validating their feelings. Their feelings are real. Don't minimize them. If that's yeah. their first love, it's as intense as it is for them as, you know, anybody else mm-hmm. in their situation.
And just giving, I suppose, that person time. Like my mum has been there so many times when my heart was broken. And yeah. it just, to have their presence
yeah.
means so much, doesn't it? And yeah. not to say, ah, you'll be grand. You'll forget about him next week.
Completely.
It's not what you need
no,
to hear.
No, no. And tell him it's normal. You know, this is normal. It's normal to have the heartache mm-hmm. and to feel this way. It's awful. But I mean, you'll survive. We can get there together. A lot
yeah,
of times people just want
that's
help.
Some amazing advice. Mm. The last question I will leave you with: how do we know if we need relationship counselling or singular counselling? Like, do we need to do counselling by ourselves first and then move into relationships, or does it depend?
It really depends. Obviously, like, I feel everyone should be in therapy. I mean, mm-hmm. I just think it's a way of life, and we're definitely getting there, which I think is really positive. More because, you know, you're gaining that self-awareness, and the more we know ourselves, the more we're better able to relate to somebody else, the more likely we're going to draw attention from people who are actually good for us and that we want and that we engage with well on a healthy level. So I feel couples need to look at, if there's a problem with communication, it's really important to reach out because the other four you can get through if you have the communication.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, and it come together, sometimes I have a couple, they might come together. And in the first session or two, I might get a bit of background information, and it's quite clear to me maybe that one person needs some individual support.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't do that then with the couple. You'd say, okay, can you go and see somebody else? I could refer another therapist to see that person, and then they would come back together to see me. But we would stay away from that issue, and they would be resolving that on their own if I felt it was coming in to the relationship, you know,
yeah,
kind of leaking
yeah.
over.
So that's it. That was, God, I've learned so much about relationships and what I should be doing better.
That's a learning curve.
But no, it's amazing. And I know that there's so many people that just feel a little bit lonely in their relationship. Mm. But just to know that there is help there and there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And the majority of couples do come through. Like, couples can't. Counseling is usually successful. So
yeah.
when people reach out, I mean, that's quite telling, you know,
yeah.
that they can get back on track.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And where can we find you, Jen?
I am based in Fallons on the main street in County Kildare. So relationship specialist, if you just Google jencameron.org.
Okay.
And my website comes up.
And your Instagram?
Relationship specialist.
Okay, brilliant. I recommend everyone follow you on Instagram because you've put up really good videos, really good information, and it could really help. So thank you so much, Jen.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Good Glow Health with thanks to Emma. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a rating and a review. It would really mean the world. And if you'd like to send me a message about any topics you'd like me to cover, please do so on Instagram at georgie.crawford. Talk to you very soon.